Giriradhari. Yashoda Nandana Brajjana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Brajjana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi jana valava girivara dhari. Gopi jana valava girivara dhari. Yashoda Nandana Brajjana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Brajjana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Puri Vrajakacharya Astotara Shatra Sri Srimad is Divine Grace Abhay Charna Arvinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Chamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Shri Gangamai Ki Shri Jamunamai Ki Srimati Tulsi Devi Maharani Ki. His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki, the Lordship Sri Sri Radha Sham Sundar Ki, Lordship Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Ki, the Lordship Sri Sri Gaunitai Ki, Lordship Sri Lakshmi Nishingadev Ki, Iskandu Ramanrati Dham Ki, Tegal Premanande, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru Nanga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, entitled The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev. And we are doing text number 19. Asanubhavam Bhagavan. Veda Goyatamam Shiva. Devarshir Narada Shakshad. Bhagavan Kapilo Nripa. Asyanubhavam Bhagavan. Veda Goyatamam Shiva. Devarshir Narada Shakshad. Bhagavan Kapilo Nripa. Asyanubhavam Bhagavan. Veda Goyatamam Shiva. Devarshir Narada Shakshad. Bhagavan Kapilo Nripa. Please chant. Asyanubhavam Bhagavan. Veda Goyatamam Shiva. Devarshir Narada Shakshan. Bhagavan Kapilo Nripa. Asyanubhavam Bhagavan. Veda Goyatamam Shiva. Devarshir Narada Sakshad. Bhagavan Kapilo Nripa. Asyanubhavam Bhagavan. Veda Goyatamam Shiva. Devarshir Narada Shakshad. Bhagavan Kapilo Nripa. Asyanubhavam Bhagavan. Veda Goyatamam Shiva. Devarshir Narada Sakshad. Bhagavan Kapilo Nripa. Asyanubhavam Bhagavan. Veda Goyatamam Shiva. Devarshir Narada Shakshad. Bhagavan Kapilo Nripa. Asya. Of him. Anubhavam. Glories. Bhagavan. The most powerful. Veda. Knows. Guya Tamam. Very confidentially. Shivaha. Lord Shiva. Deva Rishihi, the great sage amongst the demigods. Narada, Narada. Sakshat, directly. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Kapila, Kapila. Nripa, O King. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. O King, Lord Shiva, Narada, the sage amongst the demigods, and Kapila, the incarnation of Godhead, all know very confidentially about His glories through direct contact. So, because the purport is fairly long and they're very many topics that are encompassed here, I'll go through by sections. So, purport. That word and that first line, pure devotees of the Lord are all Buddhas. I've gone through many of our books, and this book says Bhavas, many says Bhavas, a few says Buddhas. Is there any difference in meaning? Can anyone say? Buddhas. And our book says Bhavas, along with Bhavas, B-H-A-V-A-S.
Bhavas.
Yeah, Bhavas. Okay. Yeah, many of our books, I looked at it, and every one of them, most of them says Bhavas. Anyway, so let me read what I'll hear, and you'll replace the word I have here. Pure devotees of the Lord are all Bhavas, or Buddhas, or persons who know the glories of the Lord in different transcendental services. As the Lord has innumerable expansions of His plenary form, there are innumerable pure devotees of the Lord who are engaged in the exchange of service of different humors. Ordinarily, there are 12 great devotees of the Lord, namely Brahma, Narada, Shiva, Kumara, Kapila, Manu, Prahalad, Bhishma, Janaka, Sukadeva Goswami, Bali Maharaj, and Yamaraj. Bhishmadev, although one of them, has mentioned only 3 important names of the 12 who know the glories of the Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of the great acharyas in the modern age, explains that Anubhava, or the glory of the Lord, is first appreciated by the devotees in ecstasy, manifesting the symptoms of perspiring, trembling, weeping, bodily eruptions, etc., which are further enhanced by steady understanding of the glories of the Lord. So I'll stop here for now, and then we'll continue. So let's mark where we left off. Om Agyana Timrindasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shumati Shila Gurbao Praviti Namini Shri Shri Vrindata Vivira Padupad Pankajadayani Prabhupada Anupadaya Namah Shri Gurbhavi Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shumati Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sunyavani Pasyati Deshidani Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Garadhar Shivasadi Gaurav Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this discussion is continuing between Bhishmadev, who, as we all learned, he's been lying on a bed of arrows going on close to a month, waiting for that appropriate time when he can choose to depart. And in so doing, he was instructing primarily Maharaj Yudhishthira, but in his presence there were many sages and devotees, relatives, and Lord Krishna himself was there. So in the presence of Krishna, the personality of Godhead, and in the presence of great devotees, if you like Damya, who was the priest of the Pandavas, and many other sages, Bhishmadev was giving instructions. So today he's talking about something about Bhava. So there are 9 stages of development of Krishna consciousness. And those are Adaustrada, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, Ruchi, Nishta, Asakti, Bhava, and Anubhava. So Adaustrada is that when one develops initial faith in spiritual activities, Krishna consciousness. Sadhu Sangha, then they take association of devotees. Bhajana Kriya, then they start practicing the principles of devotional service. Then comes Anartha Nivritti, which is a clearing stage where one starts to get rid of his sinful activities. anarthas, unwanted things, then from that you have ruchi, which is a taste starts developing for spiritual life, Krishna consciousness. Then the sixth one is nishta, that one becomes steady in his practice of spiritual life, in his practice of Krishna consciousness. Then asakti, one develops attachment for the glories of the Lord, one develops attachment for the Lord and spiritual activities, and automatically loses a lot of attraction for material life and material world. Then develops bhava, or the love of Godhead. Then after that, then one develops prema, which is pure love of Godhead, which is a higher stage. So in this instance here, we're talking about bhavas and these different personalities, so of which Bhishma Dev was pointing out three of the 12 Mahajans that are mentioned here. So these Mahajans are authorities in spiritual life. They are devotees in their own categories. They are authorities. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are more advanced or less advanced than other devotees. But they are authorities in instructions, in giving spiritual life. Unlike persons like Arjuna or Mother Yashoda, as would be mentioned here later, or the gopis, who have manifested that spiritual level of advancement and love and reciprocation, but they didn't give so much transcendental instructions. So this is one difference between the two. So we should take the opportunity to understand these subject matters from these personalities. And one thing to note here is that these different devotees, they are in all different categories, as what Srila Prabhupada describes in this purport, that as many innumerable forms that the Lord possess, there are so many innumerable devotees. And they would all be in all different categories. In the eyes of the Lord, it doesn't mean that one is greater than the other. Just like here in the temple, you have from the pujaris down to the bathroom cleaners, the temple sweepers, and everyone in between. In the eyes of the management, every one of these devotees serving in these different capacities are equally important. And it has the same meaning. Even though from an outward point of view, it may appear as though worshipping the deity is more important than cleaning the bathroom. But from a different perspective, it carries the same importance. So these different personalities, they relish the relationship with the Lord in different capacities and for different purposes, and they're all happy and pleased with that relationship. So, in other words, there is not a competition or not a level of envy that, these are gopis and Arjuna is just a friend of the Lord, so therefore Arjuna wants to compete. No, it's not like that. It's that every aspect of the Lord and his relationships are there for a reason, and it's important that we relish that. And we engage in service, and as we engage, especially in the stage of bhava, then the different relationships automatically develops and manifests. Each one of us, eternally, we have a certain relationship with the Lord. And as we develop in our Krishna consciousness, those things manifest. So it's an individual thing, so which comes with relationships. So that's That's where the word love comes in. That if you think about it, that to manifest love, it means that you have to manifest relationships, that you can't have love just by yourself. Nothing is there. No, there's a relationship with the Lord, with His devotees, and so forth. Actually, I was browsing to search for some information, and I came across this one little narrative. I didn't see any name, you know, what it was. So initially, the words and presentation looks, you know, very, very consistent with what we would say ISKCON language. So I felt compelled a little to go ahead and read it a little more. And then shortly after, I start, you know, reading some philosophy that doesn't make any sense at all. You know, is not consistent. One of the things that you're saying is, well, if you want to have love of God, then you cannot have love for anyone in this world, or anything. That you have to totally disconnect from anyone here. You have to totally show no love for anyone here. If not, you're actually shorting your love that you're going to show for the Lord. That you're going to... It's like doing a mathematical calculation. If you have $10 and I give $1 to my daughter, then I can only give $9 to somebody else. It's like that they were giving a calculation. So at that point, I just stopped because I thought it's really not consistent with Vaishnav culture. So anyway, they're talking, you know, so we are discussing about different relationships. So when the Lord manifests these different relationships with His devotees, it's actually an individual thing that may come in the form of congregation, in the form of a big group, but our relationships with the Lord is very, very individual. It's all individual ones and also confidential. And devotees should be very careful in our practice to encourage each other in that relationship, and to be encouraging and to be supportive. So there are three great offenses that falls in a very advanced category of spiritual life, and one that to commit direct offense to the Lord. The other one is Gaurava Vagya, to commit offense to the Guru. And the third is to disturb the relationship between one devotee and another, or between a devotee and the Lord. So even though we might not understand that relationship, we have to be careful to do our best to encourage, because different devotees would manifest their activities in Krishna consciousness differently. And we have to be keen enough to recognize the central point or the underlying feeling and essence of one's activities that focuses in that certain direction. And again, that's where relationship comes in, that we have to be keen to recognize one's service, keen to recognize how one can manifest due to their different stages or different bodies that they may have. That's like you have the vivid example of in the pastimes of Lord Ram with Hanuman, that Hanuman was asking the little, some pastime says spider, another one says a little squirrel, to move aside because he's doing this big service for the Lord. He's bringing these big, huge boulders. And this little creature was only bringing little tiny specks. But then he was stopped by Lord Ram, who says, told him that you are doing to your capacity, and that little creature, that little squirrel, is doing to its capacity. But the idea is to give 10% or 100% of our energy towards the Lord. So that may be manifested in different ways. So similarly here with Bhishma Dev, his relationship with the Lord is a very difficult one to understand, because throughout his life in the Mahabharata, most of it appears as though he was opposing Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is his most lovable object. If we recollect in the Mahabharata and with the pastimes and interaction with Bhishma Dev, most of the time, because he was on the opposite party, he was on the side of the Kauravas, who were antagonistic towards the Pandavas, and Krishna was there with his devotees, the Pandavas. So it appears to be that Bhishma Dev was opposing Krishna, excepting for when in the Rajasuya sacrifice, where Krishna was appointed the first one to be worshipped, when Shishupal starts criticizing Krishna, finding faults, then Bhishma was standing up, and when Bhima wanted to go and kill Shishupal right away, Bhishma was calming him down, and Bhishma was trying to calm the situation that, oh, you know, Shishupal, don't do these things, it's not good, and he was supportive of the position of the Lord. So he has a different relationship, and even on the battlefield, he was directly fighting against Krishna. He was shooting arrows at Krishna that was piercing his body. So he has that relationship, and that relationship comes in a certain way, shape, and form. And so much so that I think somewhere in this chapter is described that when Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows, and the Krishna was there along with the Pandavas and so many others, what form did Krishna appear to Bhishma Dev? Krishna appears to Bhishma Dev in his four-handed form. So that, because that's Bhishma Dev's relationship with the Lord. His relationship with the Lord is different from that of the gopis, that who rejected that Narayan form, who rejected that four-handed form, that they want to see this two-handed form of the Lord. In Bhishma Dev's case, it was different. Yet there is no difference in the relationship. So this is one thing to note, so we can continue the purport here. And we left off at such different understanding of bhavas are exchanged between Yashoda and the Lord, binding the Lord by ropes, and in the chariot driving by the Lord in exchange of love with Arjuna. These glories of the Lord are exhibited in his being subordinated before his devotees, and that is another feature of the glories of the Lord. So I'll stop here again. So there are two examples of this relationship that are described here with the Lord. And what we were discussing earlier about not interfering with one devotee's relationship with the Lord. So this pastime, as mentioned here, Mother Yashoda binding Krishna. It's described that when Mother Yashoda bound Krishna to this grinding mortar, his father, Nanda Maharaj, was not around. He wasn't there. And then when Krishna went and he knocked over the two twin Arjuna trees, the big crash came, then everyone came running, Krishna's parents weren't there either. It was just his little friends that were there. So when Nanda Baba heard, and he heard this noise and commotion, he ran to the scene. He saw that Krishna was there between these two trees that are knocked over. Then the little boys describe what happened. And even unto now in court, they always take the evidences of little children because they don't know how to twist and turn things or manifest. They can only say what they have seen. They say the truth. So these little boys, they said exactly what they saw. And then he asked, well, who did this? And Krishna spoke up. He said, oh, Mother Yashoda did this to me, tied me up like this to this grinding mortar. And Nanda Baba got very upset. Why would she do such a thing to this little child? And, you know, he was upset, and then he recollected himself. He said, you know what? That is Yashoda's relationship with Krishna. I don't want to have anything to do with that. I don't want to interfere. But you're my son, and I'll take care of you. So then he picked up little Krishna, put him on his lap, pacified him. When he was crying, he said, no, I don't want to go to Mother Yashoda anymore. Yeah. There's more past them to that. If we have time at the end, I can describe some more. So then Nanda Baba said, I'm not going to get involved with your relationship or Mother Yashoda's relationship with you. I have my own relationship. Come, now I'll teach you how to worship the Shadow Ram Shila. So like that, it was very, very vivid. And Nanda Baba mentioned that he would not interfere with that relationship. Because whatever that relationship is, he may or may not understand it. That's a direct relationship between the Lord and his devotees. So it's a fine line between doing your duty and understanding those relationships and how we should work to facilitate each other, either as a community or as a family in your own home, husband, wife, kids, or whatever that relationship is. How we should act to facilitate others to develop or establish their relationship with the Lord. And then the other example here with Arjuna. You know, Arjuna was ordering Krishna's, or what we say now, bossing him around, being his boss, telling him what to do. Krishna was just a chariot driver. Arjuna was the big kshatriya and the big warrior. But there's a relationship there that Krishna relishes that relationship. Sometimes you see with the gopis, Krishna would sometimes be subordinate to them, and sometimes he would be superior. Either way, it's to facilitate the relationship, because Krishna is known as Bhavagrahi, so Bhavagrahi Janardana, that he reciprocates with his devotees. Accordingly, he manifests the whatever aspects they want to reciprocate with him. He facilitates that. That's why, like, in the day before Ratha Yatra in Jagannath Puri, they have this, they will dress Lord Jagannath with a Hathi Vesha, the elephant dress. Because of a pastime of one devotee who used to be a Ganesh Bhakta. So he heard about Lord Jagannath, that one can worship Lord Jagannath and go back to Godhead. So when he came with his vision. His Ishtadev is this elephant form. So he came with this Ishtadev in mind. And when he saw Lord Jagannath with no arms and these big bright eyes and big face, and he said, oh, this can't be God, you know. My God is not, you know, God is not like that. And he was walking away. Then Lord Jagannath went after him and said, come, if you want to see your Lord in the form as you perceive, then come back and I'll show you. So then when he came back to the temple, he saw Lord Jagannath with his elephant trunk. And so therefore there's that celebration. So like that, there's this relationship that one keeps. So Arjuna had that different relationship with the Lord as a friend. And he manifested that in so many different ways, sleeping on the same bed, eating from the same plate, joking with each other, and finally became, the Lord became their messenger. So we can continue. Sukadev Goswami and the Kumaras, although situated in a transcendental position, became converted by another feature of bhava and turned into pure devotees of the Lord. So I'll stop because the next section goes on to a different topic. So these two personalities, Sukadev Goswami and the Kumaras, it's described that initially their position were different. Like the four Kumaras, they were impersonalists, not Mayavadis. Mayavadis are very different from impersonalists. So they were impersonalists because their development of Krishna consciousness, of their spiritual life, is to understanding the impersonal feature of the Lord. So that was their level. But when they smell the incense offered to the Lord, then that purified them and their consciousness changed, and they were able to appreciate the higher feature of the Lord, and they became devotees. So they were converted. So that's one of the further explanation of this. And Sukadev Goswami, originally, he was Srimati Radharani's pet parrot. So he used to always be with Srimati Radharani, this parrot. And when Srimati Radharani was about to leave this planet, she told him that he should stay behind. And someplace it describes he, someplace describes she. So this parrot, either male or female, I don't know. So anyway, for this conversation, I'll just use the word he. So he told her that no, he doesn't want to stay. He would miss her association so much. Then she told him, he said that anywhere where Krishna's pastimes are being described, I'll be there and you'll feel my presence. So please go wherever these pastimes are. So after some time, after she left, then Lord Shiva was describing the glories of the Bhagavatam to his wife Parvati. And whilst he was doing so, she was listening. And you know, as it happens sometimes in Bhagavatam class, you know, we would go into a little bit of a yoga nidra. You know, so we would fall asleep a little bit. But even then, Radharani once told Krishna, said, just look at this devotee. You know, he could have fallen asleep at home or he could have fallen asleep somewhere else, but he's choosing to fall asleep in your Bhagavatam class. So therefore, you know, you should take care of him. So Parvati Devi, whilst Lord Shiva was describing these pastimes, she was acknowledging, it is a thing, you acknowledge what someone is saying. So Lord Shiva was wrapped in meditation, his eyes closed, and he was describing. And then, when this parrot heard that his pastimes were being narrated, he came, and so he hid in the green bushes. So wise Parvati was acknowledging, she starts falling asleep, and then the song about to stop, and the parrot is thinking, uh-oh. So then he starts imitating, mimicking the sound. So then Lord Shiva was hearing this sound, like, okay, she's paying attention, let me continue. And he finished. So when he finished and he opened his eyes, he asked Parvati, he said, did you like the narration? And she said, oh my Lord, please forgive me, but I fell asleep. And he said, if you fell asleep, who was giving these songs? And he said, somebody else had to be around here. And in those days, these pastimes were very confidential. So then, he started searching around. And when he searched, he saw this parrot. And he said, you're just a parrot. And parrot, they can hear everything, but they can't understand, they can't interpret, and they will just go and make a mess of Krishna's pastimes. Therefore, I'll kill you. So then the parrot flew away, and Lord Shiva chased after it. At that time, he chased it, and it went all the way to Bhadrak Ashram, where Vyasadeva was also discussing Krishna's pastimes with his wife, Ditika. And she was also tired, and she yawned. So as soon as she yawned, Sukadev Goswami, in the form of this parrot, in his previous life, took the opportunity to fly right into her mouth and to be protected. You know, for one, it's like when a woman has something in her position, it's very disrespectful or uncultured for a man to go and try to get it from there. So he went right there safely, and Lord Shiva was still very angry. But then Vyasadeva told him, he said that one who has listened to the pastimes of the Lord, they are now eternal, and therefore you cannot kill him. And so this parrot has listened to the pastimes of the Lord, and therefore it's very purified. So anyway, from staying in the womb, he converted himself into this baby, Sukadev Goswami. He stayed there for 16 years and then came out as a fully grown youth. So that's how he also became converted. So these are some of the examples here. So I'll continue to finish the purport. It's actually almost like switch topic at this point. Tribulations imposed upon the devotees by the Lord constitute another exchange of transcendental bhava between the Lord and the devotees. The Lord says, quote, I put my devotee into difficulty, and thus the devotee becomes more purified in exchanging transcendental bhava with me. Placing the devotee into material troubles necessitates delivering him from the illusory material relations. The material relations are based on reciprocation of material enjoyment, which depends mainly on material resources. Therefore, when material resources are withdrawn by the Lord, the devotee is 100% attracted toward the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Thus, the Lord snatches the fallen soul from the mire of material existence. Tribulations offered by the Lord to his devotee are different from the tribulations resulting from vicious action. All these glories of the Lord are especially known to the great Mahajans like Lord Rama, Shiva, Narada, Kapila, Kumara, and Bhishma, as mentioned above, and one is able to grasp it by their grace. So when I read this, you know, I really want to change a page. I really don't want to read this part of the Bhagavatam here, because it talks about breaking away our attachment for material life and material facilities. It talks about moving us away. So it's easy to say it. It's easy to lecture to someone on these topics. But to practice it, it takes on a different parameter. It's not so easy to do. But it's another feature of the Lord that he puts his devotees in such a position that they would surrender more. So there are some different explanation and hints of this in Lord Brahma's prayer, the Tatenu Kampam verse, in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. And Lord Brahma talks about when a devotee goes through difficulties, goes through all trials and tribulations, if he maintains his consistency of worship to the Lord, then the Lord's abode becomes his rightful claim. So, depends on the devotee's position or status, the Lord may present different situations. Just like Srila Prabhupada's life was a very vivid example of that. He, when he was 22 years old, he first met his spiritual master, who immediately asked him, he said, you're a very intelligent young man, why don't you preach his message throughout the world? So it was an instruction given to him, and then later on it was given again, and then in his dreams, and Srila Prabhupada was holding on to his grihastha situation, grihastha life, even though he was preaching, he was raising funds, he wants to do business to raise funds so he can glorify the Lord more. But Krishna had a different plan. And ultimately, he allowed his business to fail. So everything failed, then his family was given up. So materially speaking, it appears as though he lost everything. So much so that his sister, Baba Tarini, told him, he said, you go on and take sannyas. He said, I have 5 sons, and my 5 sons would take care of your family. He said, you're useless anyway, because you're only preaching. You're not, you know, you're not into, you know, maintaining your family and so forth. So like that, Krishna was drawing Srila Prabhupada more and more and more, we can say in a gradual way. And Srila Prabhupada was figuring out the right message. Like when he lost everything, initially he described in his Linamrita, which we just came out in full sets again. So take advantage of those books to understand Srila Prabhupada's life. It's so glorious. So Srila Prabhupada initially, he was like set aback. He was a little disturbed. But then he recollected himself that, oh, Krishna is giving me an opportunity to become free so that I can more so preach the message and the glories of the Lord. So, by the help of his spiritual master, from the external aspect, and the Lord, from inside, as Chaita Guru, was directing him, and gradually breaking out his little snares of attachment to this material world. So, Srila Prabhupada also describes like that the Lord does that whenever one becomes, as one advances, there might be little traces of impurities still there or attachments that are there. And the Lord, through his special mercy, he helps us to break it out by removing these attachments, removing these facilities, so that one can become free. And again, it's hard to conceive of it. You know, it's very difficult to conceive of it, but it's a stage that we all have to be prepared for. As we advance in Krishna consciousness, then these things would gradually attack us. They would gradually come in our way, like our hair starts getting gray. You know, we're getting uglier every day. At least I do. And as you get old, you get wrinkled. Facilities are all the youth and all the beauty and all these things are gradually shifting apart. They're moving away. So these things are going, and gradually, even though it's an aspect of material life, but from a spiritual point of view, we can see how Krishna is giving us these facilities by taking away these material attachments, these material beauty, so to speak, from our lives. So this is another feature, another aspect of the Lord. Even Kunti Devi prays like that in the chapter we just passed earlier on, about, you know, so much that they have lost. Even Bhishma Dev was talking to the Pandavas earlier in this chapter, that so much that they have lost, they have lost their kingdom, lost their wives, their opulences, being embarrassed so much, they're being, you know, humiliated in so many different ways, and so forth. But it was a special relationship that Krishna had with them. And that relationship they recognized, especially Maharaj Yudhisthira. Many times in the Mahabharata, when Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was he was challenged by his other brothers, especially Bhim, that why are you so tolerant? Let's just go and attack these rogues, and we'll get rid of them. And then Maharaj Yudhishthira would calm him down, that no, that Krishna has a plan. So our duty is to function so that Krishna can execute his plan through these relationships. So these are the some of the points that I gathered from this purport. So in summary, like the bhava or the different relationship that one has, then we talked about one devotee not interfering with a different devotee's relationship with the Lord. We also described the pastimes of Mother Yashoda. We also talked lastly here about the how Krishna acts in different ways to facilitate the development of Krishna consciousness for the individual devotees. And one way he does that is by taking away the material facilities that are there that is holding back the devotee from the attachment to this material world. So these are some of the points. There are many more, but we'll stick with that for now. Are there any comments or questions? Correction, Mother Rukmini?
Thank you for the nice class. I just wanted to point out that going by the verse, Dashrodha, the stage of Nishta precedes Ruchi.
Okay. Yes, actually you're right. Yeah, it's Ruchi, Nishta, Sakti, Sakti.
Nishta, Ruchi. Nishta, Ruchi.
Nishta, Ruchi, Sakti. Okay. What did I say earlier? Did I say Ruchi, Nishta? That's what I said? Okay. Thanks for the correction. Mm-hmm. Mother Nandini Kishori?
Hare Krishna for the nice class. Thank you for so many examples. I really was touched by the point Bhavagrahi Janardhan and the story of Happy Resh Avatar. In Japa retreat seminars, Sachinandan Swami tells this pastime that Russians chant, some Russians, in the beginning, Ari Krishna, Ari Krishna, Krishna, you know Ari,
yeah.
Instead of Hari. Ari means enemy. So, but Bhavagrahi Janardana, Krishna takes their feelings. But I felt after that if somebody is knowingly chanting Ari Krishna, then like Bhishma Dev, you know, he would get to fight with the Lord. Thank you very much.
So with in Satya Yuga and earlier times, every pronunciation has to be just so. If not, you get the reaction of those pronunciations. Like Indra, for example, when someone was performing a sacrifice, that to get a son to kill Indra. But instead they get the son that was killed by Indra because he pronounced it wrong. But in Kali Yuga, what counts is the intention. Because for one, we get a special concession because we are not qualified to pronounce these Vedic hymns properly. So it's the intention that counts. So it's described that one doesn't even perform sinful activities by thoughts in Kali Yuga. Of course, one shouldn't take advantage of that. Then I can entertain all sort of thoughts, and then as long as I don't manifest it in words or deeds, then I'm okay. Now, one shouldn't take advantage of that. But a special concession is given by Lord Chaitanya that if one has a bad thought, but they don't manifest it, then they're still protected. So those things are there of how one manifests. Once the correct intention is there, Bibi Govinda Swami once told a story of when he was in Vrindavan for a party, and
coming and different groups of devotees would be meeting. So one morning the Russian devotees were meeting in the kirtan. And all of us know Bibi Govinda Swami is a professional singer. And so when these Russians, they were meeting, you know, their tune wasn't so quite in line or whatever. And he was thinking that, oh, you know, like, it's not so sweet. Then immediately next to him was one of the Vrijvasis, one respectable sadhu in the Braj area, who knew him. He came to him and tapped him on the shoulder. He said, just see how great is your Prabhupada that brought these Russians. Look here how sweetly and nicely in tune they are singing the glories of the Lord. And then he immediately recollected himself, oh, there's the sincerity and the intent of these devotees.